Live now.
Capital 263.
Welcome to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba.
And I am Tawanda Henry Beattie. And yeah, welcome to the best political podcast in the country.
Still the only political podcast, but as we always say, that doesn't matter. Makes us the best.
Yeah, by far, even. Anyway, what are we talking about today?
Today, the year is about to end, so we thought we'd do a roundup of the best and worst, or maybe just the memorable moments in Zim's political year. So it's a top 10 roundup of the memorable.
Top 10
roundup of the memorable political moments of the year. There was quite a few to pick from. I think on the list we ended up with about 20. Some we've sort of mashed them together. Some we've excluded but will include in what's looking forward to 2017 because they're sort of hangover from last year.
So if you don't mention your name, don't get too sad about it. No names mentioned, of course.
I feel like that was directed at somebody.
What's number 10?
Yeah, so let's jump right into it because it's going to be quite long. Number 10, we're going to start off with President Mugabe's many trips outside the country. The running joke was that he spends more time. He comes to Zimbabwe to visit. So he's a visiting president.
It's not a joke if it's true.
Hey, he makes some very important decisions for this country.
While you know, the thing is, I travel quite a bit, and I get jet lagged, right? And I suffer from jet lag. I wonder how he manages to deal with it. I actually need to find out what his secret is.
He's experienced. That's what it is.
I think that's why he's always falling asleep at these meetings, because he's constantly jet lagged.
Yeah, you can't say that about the president.
But he's always tossing.
No, he's thinking. He just likes to think with his eyes closed. Don't you do it sometimes?
Nah, yes, look, when I'm sleeping.
Anyway, so the president this year made quite a number of trips, and some of them were a bit controversial. He went to Singapore, I suppose people say, of course. Russia, actually, he's gone on his annual holiday, so I think it's fitting.
He lives in Singapore.
I think it's fitting we started with number 10 because he's left the country on his annual holiday. So he went to Singapore, Russia, Equatorial Guinea, Zambia, South Africa, Lesotho, Uganda, Ethiopia, New York, Japan. I'm sure I left out a couple of other countries.
Mars, probably.
But, you know, then there was the controversial trip to India where he was supposed to attend a festival that then did not happen because...
Did the festival actually exist? Was it... Was that a real thing?
It was a real thing, but it didn't happen because of some security risks. So, yeah, but not even the Indian president
Prime Minister was going to
that. Yeah, the Indian Prime Minister was going.
Yeah, so. And I'm sure, was it Guinea where he went?
Papua New Guinea, yes.
And he was the only head of state there?
Because he was...
So other presidents were sending deputy ministers.
He was the head of the AU at the time. He had to go.
He didn't.
He went because he thought it was...
He did not have to go.
He didn't have to go, but because it was an Africa, Caribbean, Pacific meeting,
he
felt that it would be important if he went as the head of the AU as well. So imagine all African countries did not have to go anymore because he had already sent his representatives.
Fair enough.
Right?
Anyway, how much did it cost us, the taxpayers, this year?
So in June Newsday, he reported that it was 80 million.
In June.
So I don't know what the total figure is yet for the year ending. But I know that in 2015 up to September, they said that it was $33,270,491.
Travel expenses.
That was travel expenses. So it does take up a huge chunk of the president's office budget. And I think
of the country's national budget. While we're joking about it, it's actually quite serious.
No, it is. It was announced in the budget. I'm forgetting and would have to look up. I suppose we'll tweet it and Facebook it. How much was actually spent on the national budget
compared to how much was budgeted
for 2017? No, and what the national budget for the president's office is for 2017?
Yeah.
Try look that up and then we might just get back
on
to
that. Apparently, flight tracking. What is it? Is UM Air Zim One? Is it?
Yeah, UM One.
Yeah, which is the president's plane, has become quite a popular pastime for some people online.
It did. It started around that time in February when he was alleged to be going to India, And then I don't know who it was on Twitter or some very smart individual was playing around with flight tracker and they tracked his flight. And instead of being in India, it was in Singapore.
Yeah.
So that became a thing. So now every time
he goes anywhere, yeah,
you will know where he is going.
Yeah.
So that's actually become a thing now.
Oh, that's interesting. Anyway, moving on to our next point.
Number nine. You want to do the radio voice thing. Number nine, we have Tomana, who was the prosecutor general. He's suspended right now, is he?
And yeah. He's facing charges, quite serious charges, isn't he?
Criminal abuse of office.
Yeah, which is, if you ask some of us, a long time coming. If you consider, you know, part of this point as well, Kireke, being convicted eventually.
Yeah, so also in number nine is the Kireke case. He was finally convicted. Was it 10 or 14 years?
I think it's 10 years.
10 years for rape. Henry, you might actually be able to explain.
So why Kireke was official at the RBZ as well as a member of parliament for ZANU-PF. So why this issue is so, I mean, for me, particularly important is that Tumana refused to prosecute this case. So eventually the family of the young girl who was abused by Kireke eventually had to go out and find a private prosecutor and go through this whole long legal process until it finally came to the point that he was convicted. So, you know, it sort of shows a lot of the, you know, the abuse of office that Tumana has been accused of at the moment. But it's not, this is not the only case that he's refused to prosecute. And subsequently, it's turned out that that there was a case to answer. And most of the times these were politically motivated because I genuinely believe that he was not the right person for the job. And in this instance, as to why he's now finally facing these criminal abuse charges.
Yeah, he refused to prosecute four individuals who were accused of plotting to bomb Alpha Omega Dairies, which is the
Kushungo Dairies,
which is the president's
farm.
The president's dairy farm
in Mazoe.
So, yeah, these four individuals were brought to him. He refused to prosecute because he felt that, you know, there was no case, I suppose. But they then said that this was, I think it even went close to, at some point, somebody called it an assassination attempt.
With four Molotov cocktails on a farm.
In a backpack, yeah.
In a backpack of
because the
thousand
four,
hectares.
Because the four were said to have Zim People First material in their backpack. So they had the manifesto or the document that they have.
Yeah.
And then two of them are ex-army as well. So it was just one of those really weird situations. Situation. Yeah, and Tumana was...
But of course, if I wanted to go and assassinate the president, I would go with Zim PF material in my backpack so that if I'm caught, they can link me immediately there. It seems a bit ridiculous.
And you'd go to his place of business.
With freaking, if a Molotov cocktail, guys, is a bottle, a beer bottle with petrol in it.
Yeah, so that was quite interesting. Yeah, but now Tumana is facing criminal abuse of office.
About damn time, though.
And that will definitely go on into 2017, and we'll see what happens there.
If anything, with
that case. Well, I'm sure something will happen. He's under quite a lot of pressure.
Yeah, I think, though, that, you know, it comes down to it being factional, really. He got away with it when his faction was ascending, and now that his faction is not doing so well, I think he's in a bit of trouble. But, I mean, obviously he's going to lose his job, and I don't think he'll spend any time in jail.
Which faction does he belong to?
I don't know, but I heard crocodiles don't cry.
Anyway, moving on to number eight, we have a controversial moment in our time. I'll play something for you now, and maybe then you will recognize, I'm sure everyone will recognize this moment.
We are having technical difficulties.
A little bit of technical difficulties. This is all new, but we'll get it right.
So here's the red line. Mr. President, Robert Gabriel Mugabe.
Okay, I'm going to stop it right there.
Yeah, we all know what he said
after that. Yeah, we all know what he said after that. But controversial moment of the year on our list, number 8, is when AC said...
F the president.
Right? F you to the president. And that was at the launch of Viva.
Yeah, I think AC should just... Not even the F you to the president thing. He's just the controversial moment in of himself as his life.
No, you're right, actually. This whole year has been AC doing the most, actually.
Yeah, so
he leaked his own sex tape.
He leaked it himself.
I believe he leaked it himself. Okay. Why else? I mean, the story behind it was these guys came into his house, they stole his phone or his laptop or whatever, and then they leaked it.
Yeah.
But...
Anyway, yeah, poor girl that ended up all over the...
Seriously, all over
the internet for the leaked sex tape.
So yeah, so that was, and then he did launch his party, Viva. We did have Nomaliso Mube, AC's vice chair on the show. So that's one of our...
And it'll be interesting to see if Viva can outshine AC in 2017. Hopefully.
I don't think so, eh?
I don't know. That's, I hope for the sake of Nomaliso agency and everyone there that, you know, their party becomes the focal point and not so much their president.
Yeah, but the thing is, he keeps making videos and all sorts of funny things. These days, he's posting pictures with J.K. Rowling and Walter Magaya on his Facebook. So there's, you know, he likes to be the star of the show.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's something they will be able to overcome.
But maybe if he could use that star to shine light on the party.
But is that the kind of person that AC is?
I don't know. One to look out for in 2017.
Definitely. What's number 7?
Number 7 is the Norton by-election. The stunning victory there by Honorable Themba Mlisiwa. Stunning for ZANU-PF because I think it's the first by-election that they've lost to period, actually.
Yeah, since 2013.
Yeah.
Since by-elections.
And to lose to an independent candidate was quite shocking for most people that weren't paying attention to what was going on the ground. It was, I think he won by over 1,000 votes, which seems like not a lot, but when you really consider the odds of taking away a seat, because remember it was held by Chris Mtswango, who's going to come up a couple of times today, actually. that stunning by-election in Norton was also significant because the MDCT, Tsvangirai's party, lent its support to him. PDP, I don't know about ZIMPF, but a lot of opposition parties got behind Mr. Mlisiwa in that by-election. And yeah, ZANU-PF didn't know what was hitting them.
Yeah, so the whole thing behind there as well, the losing ZANU-PF candidate, Ronald Chindedza, was then called a thief by the president, and there was a whole
factionalism.
Yeah, there was a whole factional issue around that you know, he was unduly elected to the position.
He was imposed.
He was imposed
by G40,
who then lost.
Yeah,
and there was a whole thing that you know, the Lacoste faction was supporting Mlisiwa. Yeah, secretly supporting. I mean, the War Vets supported
him.
Yeah,
the War Vets openly supported him. So I suppose...
A faction of the War Vets openly supported him. Because kune factionalism kakuma War Vets
as well. Kwese kune factionalism.
So that's another issue there. But yes, and it's great as I enjoyed the fact that there was some competition for ZANU-PF. Because I believe that... In fact, the MDCT is to blame for what's happening in Parliament today, the supermajority that's unfair.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Because they pulled out of elections, something we've spoken about, that it's something they shouldn't have done. And now, come 2018, the fact that they're going to be contesting...
You've gained nothing.
Nothing, absolutely nothing. Absolutely they've just messed up nothing. The entire system. Yeah. So now we have bills that are sailing through...
amendments to the constitution sailing through, straight through.
Because there's no opposition in parliament.
Yeah. And I think that they're really going to have to, you know, we need to hold them to account for that.
We really do. We really do.
Boycott politics doesn't work. And as Mr. Maliso, as Honorable Maliso showed in Norton, you can win if you work.
That's the thing. I think, I mean, it's not going to be easy for any political individual or party, but you have to have boots on the ground. That's one.
You have to put your hats in the game. You can't win if you're sitting in Harare saying, "Oh, we boycott this election."
So I don't know. Come 2017, MDC has a lot of ground that it has to gain.
Yeah, and there's the thing is that if there are no reforms before 2018, and they run, like what? Like, so what does the what have they gained?
What have they gained? So I don't know. And this is MDCT that because they are, as of now, the largest opposition party in the country.
In parliament.
In parliament.
Yeah, I don't
they
know
have
the country. But in parliament, yes.
They have a lot to answer for. So we'll definitely see how that goes come 2018.
Moving on.
Quickly. No, but on Temba as well, before we move on, 2017 is going to be quite interesting for him, I think.
Yeah.
I predict he could go back to ZANU.
I don't think he'll go back to ZANU. You know what? I always used to say that he wouldn't go back to ZANU as long as Kasukwere is still there. But after they were chummy, chummy, buddy, buddy in Kasukwere's office, I don't know. What's interesting, though, is we need to realize that after Mr. Maliso, Honorable Maliso, was kicked out of ZANU, he was asking, why? Why was I kicked out? So he's never really gotten an answer there. So I'm sure he'll go back given the opportunity.
But if you've listened to what Chombo, who is Minister Chombo, who is Secretary for Administration in ZANPF Politburo, also spoke about just before the conference, is that they are reviewing cases.
Yeah.
So they're listening to people. I mean, there's people like Nema who was brought back. Webster Shamu was also brought back. So they're reviewing cases depending on whether you bring yourself forward to your case. Temba has leverage in that he won a constituency. He might not go back before that because if he does, then he'd have to vacate the seat because
it doesn't. After 9 months,
crossing.
It does, yeah.
But I'm saying by the end of 2017,
doesn't make a difference.
Doesn't make a difference. Yeah.
Because the seat remains vacant. So he can continue campaigning the whole time. But I don't think so. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see in June 2018 is when we'll find out if he's going back or not.
Right. Number six on our list is more vets, actually.
Yeah, no. Yeah, so while speaking
the controversy
of
surrounding more vets,
their support to Maliso actually came after a long, tough year, man. War vets had have a tough year this year, haven't they?
It's been difficult for them, man.
They got tear gassed on the 18th of February, isn't it?
Yeah, they did. So,
and at that point in time, I was quite happy. I was like, yeah, these guys were beating opposition people up at the last elections. Shishichi were being tear gassed. They must like fuel the wrath of their own medicine.
Yeah, so they had tried to organize a meeting for more veterans. This was when controversies with Mutsango. I think he had just in December he had been kicked out of the party, and then in March he was kicked out of cabinet.
Yeah,
and was replaced with Minister Chinga Dube. February, they were tear gassed after their meeting failed to happen. Then they managed to hold the meeting with the president on the 7th of
Indaba.
April. Indaba. Which, I don't know, I think it's all factionalism. Is that the war vets argue, a faction of the war vets argue that the party is no longer following the revolutionary line that they had set out. They are not happy because a number of them are poor.
Yeah.
And, you know, the benefits or the gains of independence that are so often mentioned, they haven't received. But again, it's not all of them. It seems to me like it's a power struggle as well because war vets have been very important
in elections,
in the outcome of elections for quite some time in this country. So, right now, you have a power struggle because the other faction within the war veterans is being led by Mandi Chimene, who is alleged to be G40.
Yes.
So, and Mutswangwa side is alleged to be Team Lacoste. So again, it all comes back to the issue of factionalism.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. And then there was that communique where...
Who wrote that communique?
Nobody knows who wrote that communique. Yeah, but at the time, so the communique basically, long and short, said that the president should step down.
Yeah.
And at the time, it was pinned on Mutswangwa, who was not in the country when the meeting was held on the 22nd of July.
Yeah, but he could just have Skyped in.
That's true. But then there was another school of thought that it was somebody in G40 who wrote it and was trying to influence, outcomes, because at that meeting that was held at Railton Sports Club on the 22nd of July,
yeah,
those that were there said that the communique was not read out there.
Yeah.
But it is said that this document was produced at this meeting.
So what is going on? This is like...
It was very controversial at the time.
It's very dodgy.
This is very dodgy.
And in December, we still haven't had an answer, clearly.
Yeah, but you know, now it's sort of died down, because if it really was Mutswangwa, you'd have thought that by now there'd be some kind of follow-up. But he still remains head of the War Veterans Association.
Are there two executives, though?
No, there isn't. There's one, and why a meeting that I had with Brigadier General Tafumane, who is the PermSec of the War Veterans Ministry, he said that there needs to be some sort of congress or conference or meeting that has to appoint a new executive, if there is to be one. Right now, Mutswangwa remains head of the executive. And why ZANU-PF can't kick him out is because they are an affiliate association. So they are a body by themselves that is affiliated. And
quite a powerful one as well.
So if they choose who their leaders are. So why I think people like Mandi Chimene will struggle is because they have to go to some form of congress.
Executive.
Some sort of emergency meeting to nominate and vote in the person who is going to replace.
And she just doesn't have the people to do.
I don't think they have the numbers. So yeah, that's that on War Veterans. We hope to see what happens come 2017. Yeah. They also have issues with the youth. It's also become an issue of War Veterans, my numbers...
Are dwindling. Except, you know, when you see Jabulani Sibani claiming to be a war veteran when he's 38.
Look, there's all kinds of G-bar war veterans.
They'll keep expanding somehow.
So war veteran numbers are dwindling. And then on the other hand, you have the rise of the youth.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things. War veterans were essentially kingmakers. Now... From what we've garnered, from what I've garnered, is that the party seems to be hedging its bets on the youth to win them the 2018 election, which then has made war veterans somewhat disposable, unfortunately.
Which leads us directly into our next topic, factionalism.
Yes, my factions.
Factions everywhere.
I'm sure even in your church group there's a faction.
Yeah. Even in group re boram dad. Five aside, they can't even agree.
Who's gonna play keeper?
But the thing is, factionalism has had such an effect on our political landscape, whether it's in the opposition or within the ruling party. You know, ruling party right now, main factions, G40 Lacoste, allegedly.
Yeah.
They keep saying factions don't exist, but then give speeches about how we should be denouncing factionalism. So, you know, it's a bit of a mixed message when it comes to them. Beginning of the year, I would have said the G40 had the upper hand, especially if you look at like what we've just been talking about.
What happened with the war vets, with
Chris Msongo being expelled, you know, with a bunch of expulsions up until mid this year, you definitely would have thought the G40 faction... was powerful. I think when Dr. Amai Grace Mugabe stopped going around the country on her tours, G40 lost a whole lot of momentum.
Yeah, and part of the reason why I believe that was is because it had become quite serious. That was around the time where this bomb situation.
These four guys
who were accused of trying to bomb Gushungo Dairy. And because two of them were in the army at one of the rallies, she did somewhat say that people in the army were trying to kill her son and that sort of thing. And I think it got to a point where tensions were really rising.
Yeah.
Even within the army itself, because now you sort of put the army on the spotlight and said that somebody was trying to assassinate her.
So speculatively?
I think there was some sort of push that kind of, some sort of reason and logic had to come to the table and say, okay, wait, what are we actually achieving by speaking in this manner? And since about February or March,
she's not even a rally, just her, she's been quiet.
Yeah, that's true.
She hasn't given a pronunciation on anything besides the orphanage and, you know.
So I don't know what happened there, but it was tensions were quite high.
Yeah.
In hindsight, I think that tensions were actually getting quite high. But yeah, that she is alleged to be in the G40 faction.
My question is, she alleged, in the G40 or they just put her as a head because they thought it was easier for them to get rid of her later?
I don't know, but the thing is, the thing is, no one's actually come out and say Kutindiri G40 Ndiri.
Ah, people have come out.
Openly said
Shadrick, what's his name?
No, man, I'm talking about, listen, of course you have, who are the top guys that I mentioned?
In G40.
Professor Moyo.
Savior.
Honorable Kasukwere. Honorable Joao, and Dr. Amai.
Yeah.
The four of them.
Four of them, obviously, they're not going to say
that. That's what I'm saying. And if we look at the way things have been since about April, Joao's been quiet.
Joao had that big, massive fight with Chinamasa and his uncle reprimanded him.
Yes.
Publicly. Spanked the little boy.
He's never going to come on this show.
Yeah, it's okay. He can go and do his Rasta thing somewhere else.
Anyway, yes. So Joao was reprimanded by the president for indigenization. That's when the president gave a public pronouncement and said, you know, Joao was trying to indigenize things. So there was this whole thing. Banks were actually under pressure. But the president came out and said, none of that. None of that nonsense. That's Joao. So he's been quiet.
Minister Kasukwere has been trying, but he tried to fire the mayor of Harare. That didn't work out.
Yeah, but I'm looking at it from a factional perspective.
How
he is alleged to be in this faction?
Okay, so
since he is alleged to be in this faction, what has he done in terms of factionalism?
I don't know. Honorable Sir Kasukwere is a tough one. But if you say that as political commissar, his role is to run elections, that Norton by-election loss, falls directly at his feet.
And the appointment of Ronald Chindedza
falls also
on his feet because it is said that he, part of his faction and him being the head of it, this alleged faction, pushed for this candidate to go forward. So there is that. Ma'am Gabe has been quiet. The good professor is... is he really... He's frustrating.
No, he's never quiet. He's...
Yeah, he's been making noise the whole year. But... And this is why people believe he's the brains and the strings.
Yeah, you know, funny, I found myself agreeing with him this week.
That?
Over that Chief Justice Amendment... constitutional amendment.
Oh, yes.
Shows us factional politics there because the person pushing the Chief Justice Amendment is the Minister of Justice, who is also the Vice President of this country, who is also alleged to be the head of this crocodile faction,
Lacoste.
And you have someone from the G40 arguing against his amendment. I'm a fellow cabinet minister as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, there is that. There was also... On the other side, so now when we're looking at Lacoste and the factionalism, is the push in the media, state media specifically, to get Prof Moyo booted out, basically.
Based on the corruption.
Based on corruption and... which we'll get into the issue of corruption. But
yeah.
But the state media did come after him quite hard.
It was uncanny. It's never... Since he was in charge of the Herald, it hasn't come after a sitting minister that hard, actually.
Again, on the issue of factionalism, was how state media went after Minister Ontenge and Wicknell. And because Minister Ontenge is alleged to be in G40. So it's alleged that state media is under the control right now of... Of the Lacoste faction. It's alleged.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what they say, the Lacoste faction is controlling the state media.
Well, I mean, if you look at who the minister, the current minister of information is Honorable Chris Mushoe. So I believe he's alleged to be in the Lacoste faction. It's all allegations.
Yeah, no, that all allegations
that have been going around. And it's
what if I disappeared was Lacoste?
You what?
If I disappeared was Lacoste.
Why?
Those people are murderers.
Why?
No, so factionalism will continue to play itself out. And the one thing that we really must understand is that His Excellency Segoa Wasimbanashe is completely aware of all of this. And it plays into his agenda of maintaining power perfectly.
You know, this is what people say is that, you know, he's the puppet master.
Yeah.
And he knows exactly what's going on, and you end up playing one side against the other. My hope and my wish going into 2017 for ZANPF and for this country as a, what should I call myself, a ruling party sympathizer. You know,
what is in a party card?
I'm going to get one in 2017 because...
Oh, you want to get my inputs at the show. That's my
opinion. Namaste, my youth.
Okay.
No, but... 2017, I hope that the factions can see that it is in their interest to work together more so than it is to work against each other for the party and for their individual personal interests. So say, for example, you know, this whole thing is that one Vice President Mnangagwa wants to be president on the other side. I don't even know who their candidate is.
I think they want anyone.
Is it Kasukwere, G40? Who do they want?
I don't know.
You see, but the thing is, in working to... but it was also alleged to be Dr. Amai.
Yeah.
Who said she is already the president.
Yeah.
She's
controversial, eh?
She really is. No, but I think that it works in the interest if they work together. Because...
It works in the party's interest, not necessarily the national interest.
Yeah, it works in the party. No, but look, it works in the parties in the national interest, in the sense if you're working together and you're not fighting each other, perhaps you're actually working to deliver on your mandate.
No, that will never happen. Not with the ZANPF government. Their mandate to them is personal enrichment and aggrandizement and holding on to power. So yes, they can work together as ZANPF to make themselves richer.
Yeah, no, but...
And hold on to power.
I want them, I personally want them... to deliver on the national mandate they presented to the country.
On Zim Asset.
On
2 million jobs.
On the 10-point plan, on the 2.2 million jobs.
Oh, yeah, 2.2 million.
Yes, it's all the things.
Of which they've created minus 400,000.
It's all the things that they've promised to the people of Zimbabwe. And if we were quite honest, if they actually sat down and thought about actual...
power retention.
Policy. Correct, good policy. And changing simple things. In some of the things we've spoken about, like the ease of doing business,
yeah.
Right? If they thought about that and thought about changing those things, then we could actually be well on our way. But as you said, it's selfish interests that are keeping them from doing that. And I think right now, succession politics is something that can be put on the back burner and focus on delivering what it is that they owe to the people. So this is what I hope in 2017 they do. I hope it's very optimistic.
The year two elections, I don't think that's going to happen.
Like I said, it's very optimistic, but you know, it's something that I hope that they will do.
So number four, we're now on the business half of our top 10. And number four is Morgan Richard Tsvangirai announcing he's got cancer, as well as his appointment of two vice presidents. So yeah, that was quite a blow in June this year when Morgan Tsvangirai announced he's got cancer. For me personally, just because I've known the man, and you'd never wish something like that upon your own worst enemy. But then he didn't step down.
Yeah, he didn't. He believes that, well, you know, he's getting treatment, and I wish him all the best.
Not even for a second.
No, but yeah, but first and foremost, I wish him all the best, and I hope that he does overcome his cancer. But he didn't step down. He believes that come 2018, he'll be healthy. He'll be in the best shape.
I hope he is healthy, but I don't want him to be running for president, no matter how healthy he is.
You know, it's quite, I think there's so many ironies and parallels that you can draw between the MDCT and ZANU-PF. Is that,
hey, let's,
you know,
not get ahead of ourselves, eh?
No. Let's be serious. First, he amends his constitution so that he stays for another term.
Yes.
In the MDC. And they've called out the president for being old and fragile, or, you know.
And now their president has a terminal illness.
Right? So
and then he unilaterally appoints two vice presidents.
There is that. So he's against their party constitution or their party process.
Yeah.
Whichever it was. Yeah. So there are those dynamics as well to consider, that I suppose the more you fight something, the more you become it. I don't know.
Yeah, if you keep staring into darkness, do you think you become darkness? If you stare into the abyss.
So yeah, so
the abyss enter you. No, he does this announcement. We thought that there might be a lead to some change or some renewal. In the opposition, there wasn't. And then he announced the appointment of Honorable Chamisa and Honorable Mutsuru as his two vice presidents, making them two extra vice presidents, making them three with Honorable Mai Kupe. Which is sad for Mai Kupe, because he really, you know, it basically means that in opposition succession politics, one of these two is his chosen successor.
Yeah. But
that's basically what he said. He said, Amaya, you've got no chance. Because that's the only reason that he would have done something like that. As well as preempting or trying to get rid of any factional challenges he might have by elevating them to vice presidents.
I think that also played into it a lot more than snubbing Mai Kupe, in the sense that he's announced he's got cancer. You've got guys like, you've got Chamisa who really, in his mind, he's vying for it. I can't say he would not want the position of president of the party. Maybe not 2018, maybe beyond that.
2023.
But he has to, you know, be seen,
be
in the ranks.
In the mix.
So I don't think he was, you know, disappointed. I think for Tsvangirai, it was about how do I manage the situation going there. Because internally, you could have a factional situation where these guys are saying, look, this guy's sick and dying and he should go. And so
it was a masterful political move.
I don't know.
Are you going to admit that Tsvangirai played proper politics for once? Say it. No, you have to agree. Say it.
I don't know how masterful it was, but look. It was
a Mugabe-esque political move.
it was a necessary political move.
Yeah.
I think. I don't know. I think it was, you know, important. So yeah, we'll see how politics in the MDC plays out coming.
Especially given the hope of a grand coalition.
Yeah, as I said, in 2017, the opposition, the MDCT specifically, has a lot to answer for. And it has a lot of ground to catch up. And I, right now,
do you think it's possible that a vice president of a political party will be president of a grand coalition? And the president remains president of his party, but a coalition is led by one of his vice presidents?
I think it depends on the rules of engagement or the constitution. Well, I suppose all constitutions can be amended, but I don't think Tsvangirai would allow for such a thing to happen, hey?
Yeah.
Because why not just step down then? What are you going to do as president of MDC with a, say the coalition wins and your vice president, who is now that presidential candidate?
But you then try and make Harvest House more powerful than State House.
Then, no, but you see, now you've got issues.
The same way in South Africa, Luthuli runs Government House.
Yeah, but do you think that with the ego that...
any possible vice president.
Do you think with the ego that our politicians have in this country, somebody is actually going to be taking orders from somebody else who Harvest House?
As we do.
It's not going to happen. So I don't think that would happen. I really don't. But MDC is going... It has to impress come 2017.
No, it has to really pull up its pants and...
it has to. People are expecting... I mean, even if you look at what's happened with the citizens' movements this year.
Yeah.
MDC has just been on the back burner.
No, it needs... we really need the opposition to step up in 2017.
This episode was pretty long, so we've cut it into two parts. Up next, the top three political moments of 2016, the few that missed the top 10 cut, and what to look out for in 2017. You've been listening to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. Make sure you download part 2. And now. Capital 263.